Okay, we're beginning two lines down on the top of Lamed Amud Aleph. Tanur Banan, Yain Mebushal, wine that has been boiled. Ve'alontit, tomorrow in a second we'll explain what alontit is. Shel Ovdei Kochavim, that from an Ovdei Kochavim, Asurim, are problematic. Alontit Kivriyata Muteret. Now then, alontit in its original form is Muteret. Ve'ezehi alontit. What exactly is this alontit? Kiditanya. Like the bright that we have Gabed Shabbat, usim anumalim ve'en usim alontit. One is allowed to make anumalim on Shabbat, but not alontit. As Rashi calls it over here, you can see on the top line, alontit, potion. So that has medicinal usage versus the anumalim, which was a regular drink that people had. And that differentiates their halacha with regards to Shabbat. Ve'ezehi anumalim, ve'ezehi alontit. Anumalim is yayin. Vidvash upilpilim is wine, honey, and pepper. Alontit, which is what we're after, is yain yashan, umayim tzlulim. It is aged wine, filtered water, we'll call it. It's not water that was actually filtered, but rather water that was let to sit over a day or two, and then all the impurities or sediment and the water settles to the bottom, and then the upper water is clear water. Vafar simon, and balsam, the avde lebei masuta, and they make it for the bathhouse. And you can see it in the Masorah Shas, it says, lebei masuta lemekar. It was to cool off. So now the alontit is restricted from being done on Shabbat, the anumalim is fine. What we're discussing here is the alontit, which is what the bright that we started out with brought. The anumalim is never actually addressed by the Gemara, although the Rambam brings that he has a Misorah from the Geunim, that any wine that has anything added to it, dvash, or any other item that's added to it that makes it sweet, no longer has a din of yayin nesech, or no longer has a din of stam yeinam. Although many Rishonim disagree with the Rambam and say, how can you say that? It might be that we wouldn't put something like that on the Mizbeach, but how do you know that a non-Jew would not consider that to still be wine, or still be viable enough for him to make it into yayin nesech? Therefore, they don't rely heavily on this Rambam, and even when there are small additions to it, most believe that it doesn't lose its status of wine until it loses the taste of wine, or the wine is no longer significant within the mixture. Now, going back to our Braita, the reason that Yayin Mebushal here is problematic, even though yesterday we ended off that Yayin Mebushal is fine, because they're not menaseach it, and therefore it shouldn't be a problem of Maga Uvdei Kochavim. That's because over here, the Goy owned it, and he's the one who made it into Mebushal. Similarly, what we saw yesterday with regards to vinegar, that if he owned the wine and turned it into vinegar in his possession, that's still Stam Yeinam, because the Isser doesn't go away just because he changed it into Chometz. It was originally Stam Yeinam, and now it's Chometz. Similarly over here, it was Stam Yeinam, and then it was Mebushal. Just because you boil it, we don't say the Isser Heichan Halcha. We don't say that the Isser disappears. And the same thing with the Alontit Shel Ovdei Kochavim. The Alontit of Ovdei Kochavim starts out as Stam Yeinam, starts out as wine, and then he mixed the mixture together. So just because he mixed it into a mixture doesn't take away the fact that it was Stam Yeinam, and that's why it remains Asur. The next line in the Braita, which says Alontit Kibriyata Muteret, Alontit in its original form is Muteret, Rashi over here says that it means it came from a Jew. A Jew made the alontit, and then the goy bought it from him when it was already alontit. That means that the yayin was in the hands of the Jew, changed into the alontit, which doesn't have a din of yayin nesech, or can't be made into yayin nesech, and so that's why it remains mutar, because once it's made into alontit, it no longer has the status of yayin. It was always yayin in the hands of the Jew. Now when it goes to the goy, it's already alontit, that's why it is mutar. That's what Rashi suggests over here, similar to what we saw yesterday with regards to the chometz. If the vinegar was already vinegar in the hand of the Jew, and then the goy gets it, then it's not going to become a problem of stam yeinam or chashash of yayin nesach. On the other hand, you can see here, there's a large Balei HaTosafot where the Rabbeinu Tam disagrees, and similarly, the Rabbeinu Chananel says something similar, which is yayin alumtid kibriyata muteret klomar. Mishain by Yayin, the way that he describes it, and this is what the Rabbeinu Tam says, is Kibriyata means that they used to send over the mixture. The wine was mixed in with the Alontit mixture. The Alontit mixture included all the other ingredients besides the wine. And the Rabbeinu Tam claims that's because if you put wine into the Alontit, it spoils. So you don't add the wine until you're ready to drink it. So you store the Alontit in a barrel, with mayim svulim and the afar simon in it, and then you tap the barrel, pour it into a cup, and then add wine to that mixture. So gbriata means that you can buy the original mixture without the wine in it, and then you can add the wine yourself. The reason being, according to them, is because there's no wine in the original mixture. And that's what it means, kibriyata. It's the equivalent of a syrup or a petal that gets mixed with whatever you want in order to make it into a drink. And similarly here, this would be the syrup form that you add to the wine. And that's why they claim that it is mutar. Rabba v'Rav Yosef, d'amrei tarvayu, yayin mazug ein bo mishum giloy. Wine that is diluted does not have a din of galoy. Galoy is something we're going to discuss for the large part of the daf today, which is the fear that snakes would come and drink from water or wine that was left exposed, and in the process of doing so would deposit some of their venom in the water or the wine, and then a person who drank from that would be then subject to the risks of ingesting that poison or that venom. So now they say that yayin mazug is not appealing to the snake, and therefore he won't drink it and he won't deposit his venom in it. You don't have to worry about it. Yayin mebushal ein bo mishum nisuch. Wine that is cooked doesn't have a din of nisuch. And again, this goes back to once it is yayin mebushal, people will not be menasechet. They won't put it on the mizbeach. That's the halacha for our mizbeach, that yayin mebushal can't go on the mizbeach. Therefore, the assumption is that that was true of others as well, that yayin mebushal was no longer considered to be of a quality or a sufficient stature that people would use that for nisuch on the mizbeach. That's why you don't have a problem of maga uvdei kochavim. Ibailu, yayin mebushal, yesh bo mishum giloy, o ein bo mishum giloy. So all we address right now is yayin mazug doesn't have giloy, yayin mebushal doesn't have yayin nesach. What about if you have mevushal, is it subject to giloy? Tashma. Heid Rabbi Yaakov Baridi, al yayin mevushal, shein bo mishum giloy. So Rabbi Yaakov Baridi had a mesora that yayin mevushal is also not subject to giloy. Rabbi Yanai bar Yishmael, chalosh, he was ill. Al agabei Rabbi Yishmael ben Zerud, rabbonon lishulei bei. They came to visit him, to ask him questions, to speak to him in Torah. Yatvei v'kamevai luhu, sitting there and he asked them, yayin mevushal, yesh bo mishum giloy, o ein bo mishum giloy. Exactly the question that we are looking to answer or pondering. Just cooked wine or boiled wine, that have a din of giloy. Amar luhu, Rabbi Yishmael ben Zerud. So Rabbi Yishmael ben Zerud, who was part of the party that had joined them, so you know that the Rabbeinu Tam gives this principle in other situations. But over here, the way that the Gemara laid it out was, Rabbi Yanai bar Yishmael felt ill, and then he had visitors, which were the Chachamim. One of the Chachamim was specified there, was Rabbi Yishmael ben Zerud and the Rabbanan. When the Gemara sets up the story in that way, you can expect that Rabbi Yishmael ben Zerud is the one who's going to bring the Chiddush, because he's delineated separately, not as part of the Rabbanan who are visiting him. And that means that he's going to be the Baal Memra or the Baal Chidush over here. The Rabbeinu Tam says that, not exactly in this context, in other contexts, that you see the way that Gemara presents the story, that it's already indicating to you who's going to be the main character or the person who brings the Chiddush. Achi Amai Rabbi Shim ben Lakish, Mishum Gabra Abo. So Reish Lakish said over from a great man, Uman Rabbi Chia, Yayin Mebushal, Ein Bo Mishum Giloy. When it comes to Yayin Mebushal, it doesn't have a din of Giloy. Amrulei Nismoch. So they look now to Rabbi Yanai bar Yishmael and say, can we rely on this? Can we rely on this Mesorah? Mechavi lehu Rabbi Yanai bar Yishmael, alai valtzavarai. It's on me and on my neck. I mean, I'll take the burden and I'll take the responsibility for that. It is a good Mesorah. And Yayin Mebushal both does not have a problem of Yayin Nesech and also does not have a problem of Diloy. Shmuel, Babalait, I have a Yatve. Shmuel and Abalait. Abalait is a non-Jew who has interactions with Shmuel throughout Shas, as well as with some of the other Chachamim. Aitu l'kamayu chamra vashlo. They brought in front of them wine that was boiled or cooked. Mashche l'yaldei. Ablait didn't touch it. He didn't get involved with the wine because he knew that it would create a problem for Shmuel. So not only is he a goy who has good relations with Shmuel and the other Chachamim, he's aware of the halachot and he's respectful of the halachot, and therefore he won't touch the wine, because he knows if he does that, Shmuel can't drink from it. So Amar Leh Shmuel, so Shmuel says to him, Hare Amru, Yayin Mebushal, Ein Bo Mishum Yayin Nesach. He knew a lot, but not enough, because he says Yayin Mebushal is not subject to Yayin Nesach, And therefore, you could have touched it or you can't touch it. It's not going to affect my ability to drink it. Amte de Rabbi Chia, Iglayala ha'uchamra b'vashto. A maidservant of Rabbi Chia had left overnight this cooked or boiled wine exposed. Therefore, there was a risk of being consumed by the snake and depositing his venom in there. And now she's worried about the problem of giloy. She obviously was well trained. We'll see later on that not all women were aware of this. Adi l'kamei de Rabbi Chia. So she brought the issue before Rabbi Chia. Amarlav, Hari Amru, Yayin Mevushal, Ein Bo Mishum Giloy. Here we have another piece of evidence that Yayin Mevushal is not subject to Giloy. Shamed Rav Adarbava, Iglalei Chamra Mezigo. So the Shamash, or the servant of Rabbi Adarbava, had a problem with wine being left open overnight or exposed to the point where a snake could have come into it, but it was diluted wine. Samalei Hari Amru, Yayin Mazug, Ein Bo Mishum Giloy. That diluted wine also doesn't have a problem of giloy, so we're not going to worry about the problem here. So Amra Papa Lo Amran El Demozig Tuva. It's only true when it's heavily diluted. Of a mozig below mozig shati. That if it's somewhat diluted, then he will still drink it. The Rishonim over here give different thresholds. The basic idea means that it's diluted either more than the normal titration that they do in that area, or it's to the point where the wine is not distinguishable within the mixture. When you taste it, you taste something that's flavored, but you don't taste wine in particular. Now, I think what you'd have to say is that the snake likes wine, and the snake likes water. He doesn't like things that are mixed together. And we're going to see that in a second, that there are some stories here about the dilution, the pouring the water into the wine, dissuades him from getting involved with the wine. And it might be also, the Gemara here seems to indicate that they had a strong appeal for wine, and that they would even take risks to get to wine if it was pure wine. Umazig velo mazig mishati. Wait a minute. You're suggesting over here that if it's only partially diluted, that the snake would drink it. It's only if it's heavy diluted that we don't worry about it. He was going along in a ferry or a boat. And he was carrying barrels of wine, or he had wine with him. He saw there was a snake in the water. That was the way Rashi described tsari, means he was breaking through the water. He was making his way through the water towards them. Sami Ene the Dane. Really, Sami Ene means remove his eyes. But here it means, the way Rashi explains it, is take his eye off the barrel. Do something that will make it less appealing to him. Shokil Kale Mayo Shodabe. Took a little bit of water, a small amount of water, and poured it into the wine. Isar La Achore. And then the snake backed off, didn't continue to attack them or come towards them to get to the wine. So the Gemara says, Achaya Masar Nafshe. If it is pure, undiluted wine, the snake will take risks to drink it, even if there are human beings around. He might even attack in order to get it. And that's what was happening over there. You have people around the barrel. It's not giloy in the traditional sense where it's left open and unattended, but rather they're there. And he would be willing to go after that wine if it was undiluted wine, even at the risk of coming into confrontation with people. Amziga lo masar nafshe. But in this case where they already diluted the wine and there are people there who are guarding the wine, he's not going to take a risk to go after that. It says, Vazigo lo masar nafshe. And for diluted wine, he doesn't really go after it. Rabbi Yanai have a Beach Bure. Yanai was in a place called Beach Bure, which is somewhat northwest of the Kinneret, inside of Tzvat, towards the Kinneret side. Va'amrilei Bar Hadaya. Some say Bar Hadaya was the individual involved here, who was Hava Be'ach Boreg, Hava Yatvei, Vavakata Shatu Chamra, Mizigo. They were sitting there and drinking diluted wine. Pashlehu Chamra Bekuba. They had some wine that was left over in the pitcher or in the flask. Whatever was holding the wine, there was some residual there. The wine that was left over in the pitcher or the barrel was undiluted. Vitzarinu Bepronka. And they sealed it up with a cloth or like a filter on the top. So they sealed it up so nothing could get in there. They saw a snake. The snake was bringing over water, depositing into the barrel to get the wine to float above the level of the filter or the cloth that was put on it. So they put on a cloth to protect it so nothing would get in. So he raises the level of the liquid so it exceeds the cloth or goes above it. Bishoti. And that way he can't drink it. So you see here, he's diluting the wine in order to get to the wine, and then he's drinking it. Amre, the mazig ihu shati, the maziki achrine lo shati. When he dilutes the wine, then he's okay drinking it. When someone else dilutes the wine, it's not appealing to him anymore. What I would assume is that the snake smells the undiluted wine, which is attractive to him, and then he wants to get it. If he has to use water, whatever the means are to get to it, even though that'll cause a diminution in the strength of the wine, he'll still drink it, because the appeal to him is the original wine. Someone else has already diluted the wine, he doesn't have any smell to it, it doesn't have the appeal to him that would draw him towards the wine. So it may not even be the dilution itself, it might be that the dilution takes away either the pungency or the appeal or the smell or the odor that attracts the snake might be diminished by the dilution of the wine. Where you have undiluted wine, there he will smell it and attract it to him, and then even if it's diluted then, or he dilutes it, he will still drink it because of the appeal of the wine that he smelled. Alright, so then Gemara says, Amar Rav Ashi, Vitei Marav Reb Sharshia, Piruka L'Sakanto? You're trying to figure out answers for something that is life-endangering. What he's saying is here, the Gemara is coming up with stirot between either different instances, different stories, and then they're trying to figure out what it means. They say, well, the snake drinks diluted. Oh, only his own diluted. Snake doesn't drink only if it's heavily diluted. If it's a little diluted, he does drink it. Oh, over there, they saw him putting it in, and he's not going to risk his life. In each of these stories, you came up with a reason why the snake didn't go after the diluted wine. You're coming up with all these excuses why the snake doesn't drink diluted wine. In the end, the snake did go after diluted wine in each of these instances, and it looks like he would drink diluted wine. And what you're doing is coming up with chakirot, or answers that are great, pilpul, but in the end, if it comes to risking people's lives, how can you give these types of answers? It's just too risky to deal with it. In general, that's the Gemara's approach to this, which is sakanta chamira misura. That when it comes to sakana, it's much more problematic than isur. And we're much less likely to take risks with sakana than we are with isur. Isur, you can speak in halachic terms, because then you can speak about the differences, whether it is halachically negdar as being problematic or not being problematic. That's fine, because the theory impacts on the actuality in those cases where it's a halachic problem. But when you're dealing with a practical problem, that of sakana, it doesn't matter how much pilpul you have, whether it is or isn't, in the end, whether if it's a sakana, it's a sakana, and it's not worth the risk taking. Okay, Amar Rava Hilchata, the halacha is Yain Mazug Yeshmo Mishum Giloy. Rava is before Rav Ashi, but Rava is reflecting that same sentiment which of Rav Ashi, which is you can't take risks with this. And that means that if it's Yain that is Mazug, it does have a problem of giloy, and we do worry about a snake drinking from it, and in the end that would solve your problem. If a snake likes water and he likes wine, then Yain Mazug is also in that category and he would drink it. And it also has a problem of Yain Nesech. Yain Mevushal, Ein Bo Mishum Giloy, Vein Bo Mishum Yain Nesech. And when it comes to wine that is boiled or cooked, it doesn't have a din of Giloy, and it doesn't have a din of Yain Nesech. We started out with the Gemara where the Gemara was speaking about Yain Mazug versus Yain Mevushal. It seemed to be that they had the same dinim. In the end, the Gemara says that's not the case. Yain Mevushal does not have either of these problems. The snake doesn't drink from it, it's not appealing, and it's not good enough or of a standing that you would use it for Yayin Nesech, and therefore it doesn't have a problem of Maga Akum, or maybe even possibly Stam Yenam. On the other hand, when it comes to Yayin Mazug, diluted wine, there we say there is a problem of Giloy, and there is a problem of Nisuch, unless it is diluted to an extreme form, whereby it's no longer discernible as wine, or doesn't really have the characteristics of wine anymore. And then it would be, at least for Yayin Nesach, of course, would not be considered Yayin Nesach anymore. So on that conclusion, the Balei Tosafot bring over here, Yayin Mevushal Bo Mishum Yayin Nesach, Kein Halacha, that is the Halacha, Umutar V'maga Oved Kochavim. And a non-Jew who touches it will not affect that wine. Yayin Mevushal is outside the Parsha of the problem of Yayin Nesach or Stam Yenam. And if a Goy touches it, it's not going to have any impact on the wine as opposed to regular wine, where if the goy touches it, then it becomes tam yenam, which involves a gzera or takanat chachamim that makes it both asur b'shtia and asur b'hana'a. The question is, why is it that yain mevushal does not have a problem of maga oved kochavim? So it seems to be because yain mevushal is not used on the mizbeach, it's not considered to be of a high enough quality or a standing that you would use it on the Mizbeach. And therefore, why are you going to worry about Yayin Nesech in those situations? The real question is, what is it that makes it into Yayin Mibushal, that transitions it from regular wine to Yayin Mibushal? So amongst the Rishonim, there are a number of different approaches. The Gonim, Rav Hai Gon, and then it's brought in Shulchan Aruch HaAlocha, says that Kigon Sheher Tiach, if it is boiled, if it reaches a high enough temperature, that's what makes it into Yayin Mibushal. On the other hand, the Ramban and other Rishonim that follow the Sheet of the Ramban suggest that the problem is not simply boiling it, but that there is a chisaron, that there is some sort of deficit in the wine, meaning that the wine loses actual quantity. There is a Sheet of the Rashba and Rabbi Duran as well, which tries to combine the two and say that hirtiach and losing are both the same thing. Boiling the wine results in you losing some of the wine that's there, and so the two thresholds are the same, which is that once it boils, it's lost some of the wine, and by definition, you'll capture both of the explanations. Those are two of the possible explanations as to what makes the transition to Mibushal. One is simply boiling or cooking it. The other one is loss of quantity in the container that holds the wine. The Rambam has a more extreme form, which is not generally accepted by most of the halacha, which is that it has to lose its flavor, that it has to actually change its flavor to the detriment. It has to be negatively affected by the bishul in order for it to be problematic. That's the views that we see in the Rishonim. The Rosh opens up another avenue when he asks the following question. He says, isn't the problem of Stam Yenam a dual problem? One problem is Mishum Chatnot. We don't want you socializing with the Goyim and having intermarriage be the result of that. That's one of the restrictions. The other restriction is the risk of Yayin Nesech, that someone who touches it might have in mind to use it for Avodah Zarah or to Menasech it for Avodah Zarah. Then what does Yayin Mibushal solve for you? It might solve the problem of Yayin Nesech. It does not solve the problem of Mishum Chatnot. So the Rosh, in a sense, poses the question and then tapers off with a, maybe you can say, that Yayin Mibushal was not so common in their time. And so they left it out of the Gzerah, because Yayin Mibushal was not a product that was sufficiently available or popular in order to have the Gzerah apply to the Yayin Mibushal. That opens up another opportunity to the Yayin Mibushal might have been left out because it just wasn't an item that was of an interest to people, whereby the Chachamim would make a Gzerah to stop socializing in those areas just because it just wasn't used in social context, wasn't produced, people didn't drink it, whatever the reasons are, he says it wasn't so common. So now, if you take each of these items, and you come into the modern time, and you want to know what makes Yayin to Yayin Mibushal, the major question that's faced by the Poskim, and all the modern Poskim deal with it, is pasteurization, which is that wine that is pasteurized, which is brought up to a certain heating level, which generally pasteurization reaches levels of around 161 degrees Fahrenheit, or about 70 to 75 Celsius. But that's a normal pasteurization. There's what's used today in most cases is flash pasteurization. And in flash pasteurization, it actually reaches a little bit higher, which is it reaches between 160 and 165 Fahrenheit, which is closer to like 72 to 74, 75 Celsius. So it's actually a little bit higher, which we'll see might have an impact because you have the thresholds of what you need to reach in order to be Mibushal. Now, when they pasteurize the wine, have you now accomplished what you want in terms of Yayin Mibushal? And so that's the discussion amongst the Poskim. All the modern-day Tshuvot, Shutim, really deal with this. The first to deal with it is Rav Moshe Feinstein, who has a question that's brought to him about a factory that's making from the grape skins coloring that is used for food coloring. That many times is the problem that grape products are found in certain areas, not because there's grape in there, but because they're used for the red coloring that comes from the grapes. So it was a process that made the red coloring, and they wanted to know if it had a problem of Stam Yenam. So they speak about the process by which it's made, and that the grapes, they're brought into a machine and they're piled in. And he talks about that it's done on an automated way once the grapes are brought in there. They're brought to a boiling point, and then the pieces separate away from each other, and then they filter it, and then actually it pours out afterwards, and they reboil it afterwards once they get the pure dye or wine or coloring that they want. So he speaks about the different pieces of the process. It turns out that the way end of the process, they raise the temperature to 215 degrees. So the way end of the process where they heat it up to that point is clearly Yayin Mebushal at that point. The problem they worry about is that somebody touched it in between. In this case, it happens to be it's all done by machine, and nobody touches it in the whole process. So Moshe says that there's no issue, because there's no possibility of being maga, and by the time it gets to the end, it's at 215 degrees, it's already Yayin Mebushal. But he does speak about that there is an interim stage where it reaches a temperature, and that temperature, even if it was touched afterwards, he feels is already Yayin Mebushal, and would not be a problem. And he says that the threshold for Yayin Mebushal would be 175 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 79 degrees Celsius. And that is because he's using Yad Soledipo Lechumra, which is that Yad Soledipo, if you want to be Machmir, depending on what you're being Machmir about, if you want to know that you've crossed the threshold of Yad Soledipo, you'd use the higher temperature, which would be around what he's claiming is 175 degrees. If you want to be Machmir that it's already Yad Soledipo, it's considered that you're cooking on Shabbat, then they use the lower threshold, which would be closer to, I think, 140 or 145 degrees Fahrenheit. So he says in the process that the earlier parts of the process that reach 140 degrees, so he says that clearly 140 degrees Fahrenheit would not qualify as being Mebushal, but he says if you reach 175, 180 degrees Fahrenheit, that clearly would be Yayin Mebushal, and he says that this process would have been classified as Yayin Mebushal. That's Rav Moshe, but Rav Moshe doesn't deal with pasteurization directly. He's dealing with a factory that's processing. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach does deal with pasteurization directly, and he's asked about the problem in Mustar. And he says from the high level, looking at it, it would seem that pasteurization should qualify as being Yayin Mebushal. But then he says, even though I know about this kula, I have serious questions about using this leniency for a number of reasons. The first of which is, when it comes to the boiling of wine, he says that I was told that if you boil wine, that it causes the alcohol to evaporate from the mixture when you are boiling the wine. He says that I was told that if you light a match above boiling wine, it actually will catch. The same way that spirits, when you light a match around them, they will catch fire because they have enough alcohol content. He says that the alcohol content, when you're boiling the wine, leaches enough alcohol into the evaporation that if you light a match there, it actually will light. And that means, he says, that the wine taste is actually changing in the process of being mebushal. And he says that the pasteurization that's done today is specifically done in a manner which would not affect the taste of the item. And that's because pasteurization is done in a closed vacuum. So when you boil it in the vacuum, all the evaporated items re-enter into the liquid that's there. So you don't have any loss of alcohol like you would have in a normal boiling process. It's this closed system or sealed process, and therefore there's no loss of alcohol, no loss of flavor. That's number one. Number two is, not only does the taste not change at all, but it also doesn't lose anything from the quantity of the item that's there. And so therefore, you're missing two essential items that normally would be present in Mebushal. One is a change in taste, and number two is a loss of quantity. We said before the Rishonim speak about those two items being the threshold for what's called Yayin Mebushal. The Shokrach, the Rav Haigon, all of them spoke about reaching a certain level of boiling, but it seems to me that boiling is associated with a loss of flavor, a loss of quantity, and we saw that from the Ramban, who says you need to lose some of the item. It has to disappear some of the item. That's how you know you boiled, and then the other Rishonim says the two are synonymous. But in the process of pasteurization, you do not have either of those items. And that's what causes the problem. And then he says, I got information from some experts. Got information from America. He said that when I was in Sarfat and Sfarad, when I was in France and in Spain, he was present in the processing of wine or making of the wine, that they do not allow them to pasteurize the wine because the pasteurization, even for a moment, ruins the tam and the reyach of the wine. So that means that if someone is an expert or someone is a connoisseur of wine, they will be able to differentiate between pasteurized wine and non-pasteurized wine. And that's why the experts in those countries don't allow them to pasteurize it because they think it ruins the taste of the wine. If that's the case, then it would be fine because it would meet the standards that you're asking for Yayin Mevushal. He says the only wine that is pasteurized is the stuff that's sent to America because of the laws that require pasteurization. So they pasteurize it for export, but they don't pasteurize it for local consumption because they want to maintain the flavor. And he sent a second letter where he continued to query experts, and he said that he asked another three experts in the area, and two of them said, like we said before, the other one or the third one said, especially with regards to grape juice, that if pasteurization is done right, at the exact right temperatures in the exact right situation, then actually you cannot discern the flavor or the taste in them. And based on that, he wants to say that pasteurization is not necessarily efficacious at creating Yayin Mevushal, because it doesn't meet the criterion of what Yayin Mevushal is. So then he deals with the Rosh's claim, which is that it was not common in their time, and that's why the Gzeira didn't apply. So he said today, where Yayin Mevushal is all over the market, then how can you claim that it's not something that people consume, it's not something that's found? Maybe the Gzeira should apply. So there he speaks about Gzeirot in general, where something is left out of a Gzeira originally, even though the circumstances may change later that might indicate that the item should be included in the Gzeira, we won't do that. We don't have the right to extend or expand the Gzeira. And the fact that it was absented from the Gzeira originally means that it would remain absented from the Gzeira. He says, as far as the Rosh is concerned, I'm not worried about what the Rosh says. But in the end, he says, we're not even getting to what the Rosh says, because the pasteurization process is not giving you Yayin Mevushal. And so therefore, it is part of the Gzeira, because you didn't reach that threshold of Yayin Mevushal. And for that reason, he says that Mikol Amurad Ko Nirash Linyan Birkat Bori Pigafen Olinyan Bishul Yayin Shel Shvit Mistabesh Kuliyama Yesh Lavarech Bori Pigafen Al Yayin Mifustar. This pasteurized wine for sure should have a bracha of Bori Pigafen. And also with you doing it for Shvit wine or for Truma wine would be fine, because there's no loss in the pasteurization process. So you don't have to worry about losing or destroying Shvi'it wine or Petruma wine, because it's all captured or recaptured there. So that's actually a kula that comes out of the fact that there's pasteurization. But he says, Ulam le'inyan magan achri nira dav shakha avde shekoach hadera adif. Even though koach hadera is adif, and the shach says that when it comes to magan achri, it's only a din derabonan by a case of safek that we should be mekil. Nevertheless, he's not willing to be mekil, and he says that the pasteurization process is just to get rid of the bacteria, and not to get rid of the wine or change the flavor of the wine. And therefore, he doesn't think that it gains the status of Yayin Mevushal. And that doesn't help you pasteurization. You need literally Yayin Mevushal in order for it to remove the problem of Stam Yenam. Hartzvi, who also has a tshuva, the question came from America, and he's answering the question about this Rav in America who was Matir. Says that there was a psak that they were lenient in the case of pasteurization or Yayin Mevushal. And again here he says, I don't think that is correct. Says that he wants to bring a question up based on what the Rosh's question. Rosh said that it wasn't popular at that time, or it wasn't common at that time. But he says, how can you allow a gzeira to take place which would then remove the problem of Yayin Nesek but still have the problem of Benotehem? And so he says, and Rabbi Kiva Eger says this already on Shulchan Aruch, Laniyadati, the Rosh's question didn't get off the ground. And that is because you have to differentiate between two types of Stam Yenam. There's one type of Stam Yenam, which is the Yayin of the good. There's another problem of Stam Yenam, which is Yisrael's wine that is touched by the good. And so he says you need to differentiate between these two items, which is that the Gemara, when it speaks about Yayin Mevushal being exempted from a problem, it's only exempted from maga akum, which is that if you look in the Bayit Tosafot, it's menduyak in a number of rishonim, which he says ken olocha umutar b'maga ovdei kochavim. It's not affected by the touch of an ovdei kochavim. So he says that you can also be medayik from the Rambam, which means a Jew's wine is permissible if a goy touches it if it's yayin mibushal. What is not permitted is if you have a goy's wine that is mibushal, that doesn't make it mutar for you to use it. That doesn't obviate the problem of Stam Yenam, which is the Gzeira of Chatnot. So you got rid of the problem of Mago, you did not get rid of the problem of the intermarriage issue, and therefore he says he wants to think that the Alocha has application only by Mago, does not have application by yain of the goy, and that means that if you have yain that's produced here in the possession of the goy, just because it's mivushal doesn't help you out anymore if the goy has the wine. So he says, "Ayotzi mikolzeh shebistam yainim shalakom yesh teistapek imutar af kishu mivushal." Therefore, it's a misapplication of the halacha to say that if you have a mivushal in a factory, that should somehow remove the problem of stam yain. Then the Mincha de Yitzchak also has a tshuva on this of pasteurization, and he says over there that the pasteurization is done between 140 and 180 degrees Fahrenheit. So he suggests that when you reach the temperature of 140 degrees already, you're at Yad Soledet Bo. And that Yad Soledet Bo, already the wine or the liquid will start to get bubbles in it, even though it's not boiling until 212 degrees Fahrenheit. Nevertheless, reaching these levels of 140 to 180 is enough to create Yad Soledet Bo, which he thinks is the threshold for Yayin Mivushal. And he has, of anyone, he has the lowest threshold, which is 140 degrees Fahrenheit. But Moshe has 175 degrees Fahrenheit, and we'll see in a second that Rav Avadya Yosef has it closer to 180 degrees Fahrenheit in order for it to be considered mivushal. He has a threshold of 140 degrees Fahrenheit. And the reason they keep the temperature down there is because if it gets to too high a temperature, it'll actually cause the sugar to evaporate and it'll change the flavor of the wine. And he says, "Hinei kvar galiti dati ba'al peh." I already told you orally what I think. Dati notel hakel. Says that yayin mivushal through pasteurization, he says, my feeling and my gut is to say that it is mutar. He makes a statement here which is interesting. He says, even according to those that require, like the Ramban, something to be missing from the wine in order for it to be classified as yayin mivushal, and in pasteurization that doesn't happen, he says that we lean towards the Rashban, the Ran, who say that the two categories of criterion are the same, which is reaching the mivushal point is the same or equated with or synonymous with losing wine. And he says, based on that, it will turn out that we don't look practically whether wine is lost or not. That means that once you've reached that temperature, it's deemed as if something was lost. And therefore, in practicality, you don't have to lose anything from the wine. As long as it reaches that temperature that we require, we will assume, since the two are synonymous, that there was some wine that was lost. Even though in our case, there will be no wine lost because it's a closed system, nevertheless, it's deemed as if it's lost, and therefore he thinks that you've reached Yayin Mivushal according to all the poskim, and that's why he thinks that it should be mutar, and that pasteurization should be sufficient enough to make it that it is cleared from problems of Maga Akum. He says, especially today, where they're using Yayin Mivushal to protect against non-Shomer Shabbat people who are coming to drink and to participate. Over there he says there's a mitzvah to do it because then people can be mikariyev them, have them at their Shabbat table. And there are many reasons to then be mikil with the gabe, the touch of a Jew who's deemed to have the status of a goy because he's not Shomer Shabbat. So he says there's even more reason in those cases to make it heter. So then he does bring up the problem of the Rosh, which is that the Rosh said it wasn't made on commercial quantities. And he said today it is made on commercial quantities and maybe we should not then considered as Yayin Mivushal. He leaves that as a Tzarech Iyun, although he says, since the practice has already become that people do this, and other Rabbonim have given the Heter for it, and in addition, it's to help out also non-Shomer Shabbat Jews, he says that he's going to lean the Heter and say that Yayin Mivushal is successful at creating the Heter that we are looking for. The Rav Avadya Yosef speaks about the issue of pasteurization, and he has a long tshuva in the Yibia Omer, where he addresses all the issues that were brought up by all the other poskim. And he says that he believes that the halacha is like the Shulchan Aruch, and the Shulchan Aruch paskins that the only thing you need is retichut, which is a high enough temperature. And if you reach that threshold of that temperature, that already makes it into Yayin Mivushal. And he dismisses the Ramban and those that follow the Ramban because he thinks that they are minority opinions. We have a Masorah already from the Geonim, that Hartacha, that boiling is the threshold. And if you can reach the Hartacha point, not necessarily boiling in the sense of 212 degrees Fahrenheit or 100 degrees Celsius, but Hartacha from the side that it's Yad Soledipo, that would be sufficient. He does have a threshold that is slightly higher, which is around 80 degrees Celsius, 175, 76 degrees Fahrenheit. And he says that they spoke to the factories and they convinced them to raise their pasteurization levels another 10 degrees, so that it would become Yayin Mivushal. And he says that the factories were receptive to it, and therefore the pasteurization that's done is done at a high enough threshold where he thinks that it clears it from problems of Maka Akum, and it's considered to be Yayin Mibushal. And therefore, Rav Avad Yosef is the Mekel over here, and says that pasteurization, as long as pasteurization reaches that high enough temperature, it means reaches the upper end of what is done for pasteurization, then it would be a din of Yayin Mibushal, and you would be successful at creating Yayin Mibushal. So anyway, depending on two things, which is what's the temperature of the pasteurization in the process, you would need to know that in order to determine whether it is Yayin Mibushal. And then you'd have to see between the poskim, we saw anywhere from 140 degrees to 180 degrees Fahrenheit were the thresholds that were mentioned by the poskim as to what you had to let it fall, which would create the Yayin to be Yayin Mibushal. And then you'd have to see the difference in the poskim with the Yayin Mibushal, whether when you're making it on a commercial basis, is that successful at creating the Yayin Mibushal and protecting you? We saw that Har Tzvi thinks that only helps you for Magal, but the Kukhavim doesn't help you for Stam Yena. So Rav Avad Yosef thinks it clears everything out of the way and can even be done through pasteurization. And we saw that of Shlomo Zalman Orbach, who wants to differentiate between Yayin Mibushal and pasteurization, where the pasteurization doesn't have any loss that it's involved in it, and the problems that we raised with the Rosh, that it was something at a time when it wasn't common to drink it, but today, where they're making it in commercial quantities, you can't make that claim, and therefore they were more dismissive of Yayin Mibushal being successful at accomplishing the protections that we want from it. But I think that the poskim all mentioned this, that it's already been mekubal, that Yayin Mibushal is successful at solving these problems, and therefore most of them, even though they might have doubts about it, they don't want to pull against what has become the common practice of the people, to say that Yayin Mibushal is protective. The case of pasteurization is something that it's a makloket poskim, and then you'd have to go to your local posek to ask them what type of threshold and whether pasteurization is sufficient in creating what you want. What you're pointing out is something that the poskim deal with, which is how did the gzera come about? It's actually machloket in the Rishonim, as whether the gzera of Yayin was together with pot and shemen, and then originally it was just an iser shtia, and then later on top of it, they added an iser hana when they saw there was a problem of Yayin nesech, so they added on the iser hana on top of the stam yenam. If that's the case, then Yayin Mibushal may only solve the problem of the Yayin nesech side, which is the hana side. It may not solve the shtia side. If that's the case, you've solved the problem. You say chatnot is still a problem, and that's why there's nisr shtia. Nisr hana goes away because it's Yayin Mibushal. And that is something that was promoted by the Har Tzvi in his tshuva, this distinction between the two. And therefore he would argue that there isn't necessarily a heter shtia over here, there might only be a heter hana. If you think the gzeirah was all one gzeirah up front, which was there's an nisr shtia hana in one shot, then when you say Yayin Mibushal removes that problem, it's going to remove the entire gzeirah, not just the hana aspect of it. And then you'd have the question of the Rosh, which is then how do you solve the problem of chatnot? And then the Rosh says it wasn't common, and then today being common, that's what he's complaining about, that maybe there's no heter of Yayin Mibushal today because of the problem that it's much more frequent. Now, the Rosh only speculates as that being the reason, and that Rav Avad Yosef points out, and his son, the Tor, when he brings the halacha, does not bring his father's statement about the Yayin Mibushal, and therefore they believe that the Rosh's speculation or statement is not accepted the halacha, and for that reason, Rav Avad Yosef says, we don't worry about the Rosh, and we don't worry about the fact that it's made at commercial levels today, and even though it might raise the problems that you're mentioning, which is the problems of chatnot, which is true, that when you have events where there's socialization between Jews and non-Jews, they end up serving Yayin Mibushal for the purposes of protecting the Jews. And then, since we're right before Purim, you can mention that that might have been the problem of the Suda of Ashkashverosh. It wasn't that the Jews were drinking non-kosher wine. It wasn't that the Jews were eating non-kosher food. It was their participation in the event itself that both involved Chilul Hashem and the way that the Gemara speaks about it, the Klei Beit HaMikdash and the Korban HaBayit. But even without that, they were involved in a party that was filled with immorality and filled with things that a Jew shouldn't be participating in. And just because you have kosher food and kosher wine doesn't make it that it's a kosher su'uda. And that's very much what I think the Rosh is speaking to and others are speaking to, that there is a letter of the law, but there's also a spirit of the law. And that the spirit of the law here might have impact, which is that if the whole point was to separate, then if you use the letter of the law to create a connection between you, then you've defeated the purpose of the gzera up front, which is otherwise known as the Ramban's Naval Lishut Torah, is that you can do things by the letter of the law, but then be abrogating the whole spirit of the law in doing that. Although again, you see here that many of the poskim are willing to be mekil for sure by maga, but even some of them by stam yenam because of this heter of yayin mibushal. Shamei the Rav Chilkiya bar Tuvi, igle hau kisto demayo. So the servant to the shamash of Rav Chilkiya bar Tuvi had water that was left exposed, vanaim gaba, but he was sleeping adjacent to it. So it was open during the day, but he dozed off right next to the water. Ata the gabet Rav Chilkiya bar Tuvi. So he came to Rav Chilkiya bar Tuvi to discern what was the halachic implications of what happened. Amalei Ari Amru, Emat Yashen Alehen. That the fear of someone who's sleeping affects the snake. He's not going to come to drink the water if he knows that someone is sleeping there. Vahani Mile Biyomama. That's only during the daytime. Avabalelia, low. At night, that's not the case. Velohi, and the Gemara paskins against this and says it's not the case. Loshna Biyomama, Loshna Velelia. Emat Yashen Alehem, Lo Amrinan. We do not invoke this principle that when there's a human being adjacent to the item that is exposed, that they avoid coming there. And it doesn't matter if it's open and exposed, if the person is not conscious of what's going on around them, they're not protecting it, and then the snake will come and drink from it. Rav, lo shati mi bei arma'a. Rav would not drink water from the non-Jewish areas. Amar lo zirei begilui. Because they didn't worry about gilui. Therefore he wouldn't drink it. Mi bei armalato, from a widow's house, shoti. He would drink it. Amar sircha de gavra nikito. She still keeps up the practices of her husband. Her husband was makbid on gilui, and she remembers that's what they did, and she'll continue to do that, even though she herself was not aware of it or was ignorant of the matter. Since her husband made her do it, she'll continue to do it even after the passing of her husband. She would drink water from a widow's house. Shmuel, lo shati maya ve'er me'ar melito. Shmuel would not even drink water from a house of a widow. Amar leit la emta de gavra. She's missing the fear of her husband. Below Michsayamayu, and therefore she doesn't cover the water anymore. She covered the water in the past because she was afraid that her husband would discover it or get upset at her about it. So she did it because her husband told her to do it, which clearly indicates that the women were ignorant of the law here, and maybe ignorant in general because of their standing and lack of education. And so therefore it was the husband who was indicating to her to cover it. And Shmuel says, once the fear of the husband's gone, she's not going to be makbid on it anymore. But Mabe Arma Ashati, he says from the Bay Arma, they used to drink the water. Even though they're not makbid on gilui, leaving exposed, they are makbid on nikayon. They don't want the water to get dirty. So they cover the water, not because of gilui, they cover the water because of the fact that it could become dirtied or spoiled or soiled. We have another version of this where Rab is the same. He would not drink from the non-Jewish places, but would drink from a widow's house. Shmuel lo shati maya lo mi be'arma v'lo be'amrata. In this case, Shmuel wouldn't drink from either place. Not from the non-Jews and not from the widow. Amri Yavshu ben Levi, shlosh yenotein. There are three different types or classes of wine. Ve'im ve'em mishum gilui. And each one of these classes of wine does not have a din of gilui. The snake doesn't drink from it. Ve'eluhin. One of them is chad, the sharp wine. The other one is mar, the bitter wine. And the third one is matok, which is the sweet wine. Chad, the sharp wine is tila harifa. It's a type of wine, the matri zike. It's so potent, it's so acrid, that it actually causes the flasks to burst because of that pungency in the wine. That's what we mean chad. It's so sharp in that way, and that will keep the snakes away because it's so potent. If you remember, 2 days ago we had in the Gemara, the wine that was spoken about there was tilya, and Rashi says that it means very strong wine. Although the Bali Tosfot would say that we find that tilya is also a weak wine. And it's also interesting over here that the Gemara says tilya harifa, that it qualifies the tilya as being harifa. So that would make it sound like tilya by itself, or the standard default tilya, was not harifa. This was in particular tilya harifa, which would be supportive of the Bali Tosfot to say that tilya can be weak or strong. It happens to be here that it's harifa. Rashi said by definition the tilya is harifa. Rashi would have to read it as just being, it is harifa because it is tilya. Mar is yarnico. The bitter wine is a wine that is known as yarnico. Though the Oroch has a girsa of yarkona, which then has the shortish yarik in it, and that means that it was wine that had vegetables that were added to it, and those vegetables make the wine into something that is bitter. Matok, the sweet wine, is chulya, which Rashi over here says is wine that is machman ha-shemesh b'tocha ha-navim b'shuveni ha-gun. It is because the grapes sat out in the sun and they were let to either rot or boil in the sun, and that caused them to sweeten. And that's why the wine is sweetened. Others say that it is synonymous with yayin mibushal, and that's what it means, kulyad, which is a sweet wine. Or there are others who suggest that it is wine that came from a place that happened to have extremely sweet wine. Rav Chama matni li'ilavaya. Rav Chama had a different version of what it meant, these three items. And Rashi says over here, mashke mishubach. It's a high-class wine, or a very good wine that the snakes are not interested in. Chad, a sharp wine, is chamar u'pilpilin, is wine together with pepper. Mar, a bitter wine, is afsintin, a mixture of wormwood and wine. Matok is made by. And Rashi says over here, mashke mishubach. Bara lashon paras is mishubach. It's a very nice wine, or very sweet wine, whether it's a dessert wine or something that was appealing. All right, now, Arashem and Lakish, Kreina Embo Mishum Giluy. This type of wine that is, Rashi calls it Chilya Matok, doesn't have a problem of Giluy. My Kreina, Amravau Chamra Chalya Ta'atami Asya. It is this sweet wine that comes from the area of Asia Minor. And so it was a particular wine that was extremely sweet, and the Gemara assumed that it's under this category of the matok, and since it's in the category of matok, it's not a problem of giloy. Amar Rav, mekomo yesh bo mishum giloy. If you are drinking it in the place where it's made, or it's exposed in the place that it's made, then there is a problem. My taima, chemar medino. That's the local drink. So the snakes are accustomed to whatever the local drink is. So when you export this chalia from Asia to other places, the snakes won't drink it because it's not something they're used to. It's not something they're accustomed to. In the location where that is the wine that they make, and that's the wine they drink all the time, then the snakes are already accustomed to that wine and they would drink it. Amarova, hai chamra, the akrim, wine that already starts to harden or coagulate at the top, which is an indication of it fermenting into vinegar. And as Rashi notes over here, the akrim means that hechmitz velo chometz agun. So it is beginning to ferment into vinegar, but it also seems to be spoiling, and therefore it's not even making good vinegar. It's actually hardening or coagulating on the top because it's going bad. And some say that the word is not akrim, but akris, which is derived from the word acrid, which means something that is very pungent and sharp, harsh, unpleasant, and so that would equate with the spoiling of the wine or of it fermenting into a vinegar. Atlata yomim, for the first 3 days, yesh bo mishum giloy. It has a din of giloy, o mishum naya nesech, and it still has a status of yaya nesech. Mikan ve'elech, after 3 days, ein bo mishum giloy, ve'ein bo mishum yaya nesech. And it loses its status of wine, it really becomes chometz at that point on time, or takes on the shame chometz, and for that reason, it is not considered to be giloy anymore. It doesn't have problems with giloy. It doesn't have problems with naya nesech. V'nerdai amrei, afilu lebatar tzlata yomei, kashina mishum giloy. And I say that even after 3 days, we still worry about giloy, my taima. Zim mikre v'shoti. There are times where the snake chances to come here and decides to drink it, even though normally he would not drink it. Tarabanan, yayin toses, ein bo mishum giloy. So Rashi explains over here, yayin toses means wine that is bubbling, grapes that were pressed, and the wine that is coming directly out of the press, when it first comes out of the press, has a foam or a heat to it and a boiling side to it. So it's called yayin toses, or what's called yayin migito, or the equivalent of grape juice in a sense. Does not have a problem with giloy. Bikama tesisato, how long does it have a status of yayin toses? Gilma yamin, for the first 3 days that it comes out of the press, it's considered to be yayin toses. Grape juice or not wine, and therefore it's not appealing to the snake. Hashichlayim, eimbe mishum giloy. Shechlaim are cress. Cress is an object that is solid, and therefore you can't be speaking about cress. And as Rashi notes over here, it's cressin taruf bekli. It is scrambled up, v'shachuk, and then pulverized or crushed, v'yayin omayim nutnumbo. And then they put yayin, wine or water in it, into this mixture. So the reason you have giluy over here is because it's an ingredient that is included in water or wine. And so what they're saying over here is, it doesn't have a din of giluy. B'nei Gola, Nagube, and Isur. Nevertheless, the B'nei Gola are still no egg to not drink it, even though here the Gemara claims that it doesn't have a din of Giluy. And the Tosafot brings the case from the Gemara Nitarim, where there was an instance where it seems like a snake did drink from this wine. And that's what he says. That's what the Bnei Gola were choshesh for, which is that there were times or instances where the snake would drink from it, even though in general he would not be interested in it. Nevertheless, since there are these chances that he would drink from it, the Bnei Gola were machmir and did not drink it if it was galui. That's only if there's no vinegar in it. If there is vinegar in it, then the way Rashi says it, it stings the palate of the snake, the vinegar, and therefore he's going to stay away from it, he won't drink it. On the other hand, there are those that say just the opposite, which is bigre bay. He's drawn towards it. It's appealing to him, it's appetizing to him. That means that you don't have the dispensations we had before. That if it has vinegar in it, actually it's more problematic according to those poskim. Kutach Hababli. Kutach Hababli is mentioned in the Gemara Psachim because of the chametz problems. It is made out of moldy bread, whey, and salt. It was a dip that was used mostly as an appetizer. It was something that did not go bad and was very pungent or potent. So Kutach Hababli in bo mishum giluy. There's no problem of giluy when it comes to Kutach Hababli. Ubnei gola nalgubo isur. Despite that fact, the Bnei Gola still do not eat Kutach Hababli if it was left open, even though the pungency of the item would have kept the snake away. Amar Rav Manshi, eat Pei Nekure Chashina. We don't worry about it unless you see some punctures or some holes in it, meaning some holes that look like the shape of fangs, then we'd worry about it. But without that, we would not worry about it. Amar Rav Chiya Rashi, Amar Shmuel, Mei Tiftif, Ein Bo Mishum Giluy. Here, whether it's water or wine, if it is dripping, there's no problem of giloy, because the drip, drip, drip sound will scare away the snake, and he won't come and drink from it. Amar Rav Ashi, v'hu da'avid tif, da'adi tif tif. That's only if the dripping is frequent enough that when one drop has been done, the next drop comes right after it. So it has to be a really consistent and persistent type of dripping in order to scare away the snake. Amar Rav Chiya Rav Ashi, Amar Shmuel, p'teina ein bo mishum giloy. The opening at the top of the teina, the way Rashi describes it over here, is where you pull the fig away from its stem, from the tree. Over there, we don't worry about gilui. Although the Rabbeinu Chananel explains that pia teina lacha, sheish ba lachluchit, ein bo mishum gilui. If there's liquid or there's some moisture there in that opening of the teina, we don't worry about that being venom that was deposited there because it's naturally there is water or some liquid that gathers in that spot. Others just suggest it's what we discussed earlier with regards to the shamir that the Bayit Tosfot brought, which is that when the fig ripens, it gets hot, it actually cracks or breaks. And we're speaking about those crevices or those breaks. And we say we don't assume that the snake bit directly into that area where the crack is, so it wouldn't be visible, his puncture of the teina. Or the other way around, that he had bitten over there and then the crack went just along the lines of where he had bitten. So it somehow was covering up the fact that there was a snake there. That we don't worry about. But at the Bayit Tosfot note, if there is nikur, if we do see bite marks in the teina or a hole in the teina, we will be choshesh for the problem of the venom being deposited there. Come on, who is that like? Hi Tano. It's like this Tano, the Tani Rabbi Elazar Omer, Ochel Adam HaNevim V'Teinim Balayla. First, going to eat grapes and figs at night, even though he can't check to see whether they've been eaten by a snake or punctured by a snake. Veinu chosheish, we don't worry about it. Mishum shenemar, the pasuk says, shomer pitayim Hashem. Hashem watches over the fools. The Gemara generally invokes this principle where it's something that is commonly practiced by individuals, and the probability of danger is low enough that we would already consider it improbable. So even though it's something that could happen, it's pretty improbable. And number two is that people in general have the practice to eat grapes and figs at night. So when we combine those two together, we say, Shomer Pitayim Hashem. We don't ask people to desist from their normal living or normal life and not accept any risk whatsoever. They have to take what's considered to be normal risk and normal assumption of safety. And we can't burden them with things that are going to be impossible for them to live with. And that would be the case by saying to them they can't eat figs and grapes at night when they can't check them for holes or punctures in them. And so you see from that, that this Tana believes that figs in general, we don't worry about giloy in the figs. So you also don't have to worry about the fact that there's a hole at the top of the fig from where it was picked. You don't have to worry about maybe the snake deposited the venom exactly in that place and you won't be able to discern it. It's too far-fetched, and therefore we don't worry about it. Amar Rav Safra Mishum Rabbi Shua, Daroma from the south, or Diroma from Rome. Shlosha Minei Eresheim. There are three types of venom. Shobachur, the venom of a young snake, Shokeya, sinks. Shobenuni, the venom of a middle-aged snake, Mifapapeya, it floats around, it's in the middle area. Vishel Zakein, Tzach. And that of an older snake floats to the top. The Memra, the Komet of Koshish, Kochush Chele. From this you would suggest that the snake's power or strength are diminished as it ages. Vatanyo, don't have a brighter. Shloshim, Kozman Shemazkinim, Gvura Mitosefepem. There are three animals by which, as they age, they only get stronger and stronger. Pelein, and they are the dog, the fish. The bigger and older it gets, the stronger it gets. Nachash, a snake. The longer it lives and the bigger it gets, it's stronger. V'chazir, and a swine. Koach, a supehu de kamosit. You're right. In terms of strength or physical power, the snake as it ages gets stronger and stronger. Zihare, its venom, kolish, diminishes. The venom over time diminishes or loses its potency with age, but the strength of the animal increases, the physical strength of the animal increases. So the snake's getting stronger, but its venom is weakening over time. The truth is, it has to do with the density of the venom versus the density of the liquid. And so the more liquid that is together with the venom will determine the density. The venom itself is very dense, but the more liquid that's mixed together with it will make it less dense. The less dense it is, the more chance it will be that it floats to the top. The denser the item, the more likely it is to sink. So depending on how much liquid comes together with the venom, which is extremely dense, so if it's extremely dense, then it would sink to the bottom. The more liquid that is deposited along with the venom, the more likely it is to float to the top, because that is a reduction in the density of the venom that is deposited. And that's the difference here. The venom and the amount of liquid that's mixed together with it, which is both different by snake and by age of the snake, then will determine where it is in the liquid, whether it stays at the top, sinks to the bottom, or is in the middle. Shobachur shokeya lamayuchuta. The fact that a young snake's venom sinks to the bottom, why does that have any implication? The Tanya, we have a brighter. Chavit shin gnitzkala. You have a barrel that was exposed. Even though nine people have already drank from the barrel, you think that the barrel doesn't have any problem with it because nine people already went. If you're number 10, what's the chance that there's going to be sakana? Below me too. Lo yishtem imenu asiri. The first night you drank from it didn't die. Doesn't mean you as the 10th should drink from it, because if it sinks to the bottom, the problem may only exist at the bottom. And the other people who drank it didn't have the problem because the venom was at the bottom. And Maisa Shahaya, there was an incident like this. That nine people drank from the barrel or the water below Meitu and they didn't die. Shata Siri Umeitu, and the 10th person drank from it, died. And they correlate this with the venom of the snake that sank to the bottom. Amar Rav Yirmiya, Zeu Shokeya. That is the case of Shokeya. That's what the Chachamim were speaking about. And that's why that 10th person died. And that was his comment on the fact that nine people drank and were fine and the 10th person was problematic. And the same is true not only by liquids, but also true by fruits or melons, which are opened and have a liquidy inside to them, and they're left around for a period of time. If they have giloy, you have the same problem of the venom sinking to the bottom of the melon. A melon that was exposed, even though nine people ate from it, below metu, and they didn't pass away, lo yochal mimenu asiri. The 10th person should not drink for it. Maisahayo, there was an incident like that. Va'achlo mimenu tish'ah, nine people ate from it. Below metu, and they were fine. Va'achal asiri umet, and the 10th person then ate it and passed away. Samarabi, razehu shukeya. This case is a case of shukeya. And that's what Rabbi Yirmiyah said before. Rashi over here brings that the nafkamina is not only by a bachur. You have nine people drink, and they're fine. And then the 10th person drinks and dies. The same problem with a zakein, that the person shouldn't drink the beginning of the barrel, because there's a risk that it was an older snake and the venom's at the top, and they shouldn't drink the middle of the barrel because it might be a middle-aged snake. So Rashi says it's enough kamina for all of these. Don't be the drinker of the barrel if it has gilui in it. Doesn't matter if you're at the top, the middle, or the bottom. Each one of those can present a problem. I think they bring the example of the bachur and the bottom of the barrel, because it's shocking that nine people could drink from it and be okay, then only the 10th person at the bottom of the barrel gets hurt by it. I think that's why they brought this case. Waters that were exposed, you shouldn't dump them out in the Rishut Rabim. And you shouldn't use them to sprinkle to keep the dust down in the house. And you should not mix the cement with them. The reason in all three of these is because people walk on them barefoot. People walk in the Rishut Rabim, people walk in their house, and people, when they're mixing the cement or the plaster, when they're mixing it, they do it barefoot. And therefore, they could be exposed to the mayim that had the venom inside of it, and you're putting them in danger by putting this water into there. He shouldn't give his animal to drink from it, and he shouldn't give his friend's animal to drink from it. There, the seeming problem is bal tashchit, because your animal's going to die from it, so there you shouldn't give them to drink. And you shouldn't wash your face, your feet, and your hands with them. Even though you're not ingesting it, it's still, you shouldn't do it in those areas. Places that there are crevices is asur. Places that there are no crevices is mutar. But says, the achirim and the tanakama seem to be the same thing, which is, he says you can't wash your face, your hands, and your feet. All those are places that have crevices in them. Ikabanayu, gavayad, vigabaregel. The difference between them is the top of your foot and the top of your hand, where there's an area that is smooth, but it is still your hands and your feet. Verumne da'ape, which are his cheekbones. It's another area that doesn't have any crevices and is smooth. That's an area that would be a nafkamina between the two positions. So according to the Tanakama, it would be a sur. Whereas for the people who say that you need a stak or a sirta, there is no sirta over there because the area is smooth. Now the problem with, as Rashi notes over here, having crevices in the body, that doesn't mean that you have a cut or you have somewhere where there's exposure on the body. And obviously there's a problem if the venom gets in through that cut, that it's entering into your bloodstream and it would be very problematic or very dangerous. So we're not just speaking about someone has a cut and they might be affected by it. We're even speaking people have no cuts, but they have areas of their body that have crevices. Rashi notes here between the toes. And if you have the liquid out there and then the liquid gets between the toes of the individual, it will sit there for a longer duration because it has somewhere to gather or sit. And so the problem with sirta is that it stays around a long time. And when it stays around for a while, there's more chance of exposure that the individual will have from that. Either it finds its way to a cut, or you end up stubbing your toe, getting cut while it's there, or you touch it then when it's there, because it's around for a while. So for that reason, Rashi thinks that it's not just about actual wounds or cuts in the individual or crevices in the individual. It means any part of the body that is able to hold water or hold the venom there, that would be problematic. Shouldn't give it to the animals to drink. You don't have a bright of a mashkeu the bemat at small. You're allowed to give it to your own animal. It says, that is a shunra. Rashi over here says that that's an animal who is immune to the venom of the snake. And that's why many people translate shunra in other places as a mongoose. Because the mongoose are known for their ability to kill snakes and their possible immunity to the venom of the snake. And so that's why some people translate the word shunra when it comes up in Shas as being a mongoose because of the statement over here. While others suggest that it's something from the feline family, as a shunra is known as a chatul, or we discussed in other locations in Shas all the other opinions as to exactly what a shunra is. But here it's really correlated or related to the fact that they have either some immunity or the ability to kill snakes. Others suggest that it doesn't mean a mongoose, it just means an example of any non-kosher animal. And you can feed it to a non-kosher animal because humans won't consume it. And that means that the problem by your animal, your friend's animal, is not that it might kill it. The problem is that you might end up eating the meat if you shech that animal after giving them this water, and then you would consume the venom that's inside of the animal. So that's why you wouldn't do it by a behemah tmeah. Like a shunra, it wouldn't matter because you're not going to eat the animal. So that's the other way to view the differentiation that's made over here. If it's a shunra, you can give it to your own shunra. Why can't you give it to your friend's shunra? So because it causes it to be weakened. Didei nami kochish, that weakens your animal as well. So why would you give it to your animal? Hadar bario, it gets healthy again, comes back to its normal strength. Dechavrei nami hadar bario, Your friends will also go back to being healthy. So why not give it to them? Get a little weak and get it strong again. The answer is, Zimnin de Bailey Zvuna Umasi Le Minei. Sometimes he has to liquidate and he has to sell it. And that interim period where it's weaker and it's not strong, he's got to sell it at a fire sale price because the animal looks weak. It doesn't look like it's in its full healthy state. And that way you'll cause your friend a loss. And just to conclude about this issue about Giloy, the Baalei HaTosafot and other places note that it has to do with the nature of the location in which you're in. In a place where snakes are not common, or even a place where snakes are common but they don't drink from these items, then these dinim would not apply. So these dinim are particular to a location, a place, and a circumstance, and therefore they may not have application today. And the Gra and Shulchan Aruch brings additional proofs to that position of the Baalei HaTosafot. There are others that have a more, we'll call it, Kabbalistic and spiritual view of these halakhot that believe that even though it may not have application in the practical world with regards to snakes and other things, there is the world of the spirits and the malachim and all that, which are also affected by these items, and therefore we still should be makpid on them, even if they don't necessarily have application here. And that's a broader machloket about items like this. Mayim gluim, yayin galoy, melach stomit, mayim achronim, lighting the Chanukiah outside, where the Baalei HaTosafot in many of these instances say it doesn't have application today or it's not relevant to us. And there are other poskim always on the other side saying that even if it's lost the tam that we know of or the practical tam to it, there's still a reason in the spiritual worlds for it. And therefore we should still maintain these halachot despite the fact that they may not be practical. All right, we're going to stop over here, two lines from the bottom of Lamed Amud Bet.